The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's a fairly quiet week in Washington with Congress out and the President and Vice President out doing a bunch of road shows to press their domestic agenda. And so we're going to spend some time unpacking one of the key elements of President Obama's second term agenda, the issue of climate change, environmental preservation, and connecting some of those issues to the rebirth of American manufacturing and also sparking American ingenuity. We're going to do that today by spending a lot of our time talking to some professors who are engaged on the front lines of some cutting-edge research that relates to these topics, and three of those professors joining us today are from Ohio University, located in Athens, Ohio, the first university west of the Appalachian Mountains here in the United States, a school with a great tradition. And our first guest is Dr. Scott Miller. He is the Director of Energy and Environmental Programs at the Voinovich School at Ohio University, and there he oversees what's called the Consortium for Energy, Economics, and the Environment, or CE3. So Dr. Miller, welcome to the show, and first give us a little bit of background about CE3.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me. Sure. Yeah, CE3 was founded several years ago in response to the university's inward look. They were in the process of putting together a strategic plan for the university, which we called Vision Ohio, which sort of lays out the groundwork for the next 10 years for the university, and a large portion of that came up that they were interested, the university is interested in promoting interdisciplinary research. And another area of that identified energy and environmental research as a core competency. But what we have here at Ohio University, as with a lot of institutions, is pockets of excellence scattered around the university. So we have folks in the College of Arts and Sciences and Engineering and the College of Communications. And so CE3 was developed to aggregate and then to elevate the voice of energy and environmental issues on campus. So those areas where there's kind of interstitial spaces between certain technical disciplines and policy and business and so on and so forth. So we act as kind of a glue for the university to pull together researchers, willing researchers, to focus on those kind of core interesting issues related to energy and the economic and environmental ramifications of energy.
Well, Dr. Miller, one of the things I really like about the state of Ohio and what you guys do at CE3 is really the energy sector in Ohio is basically past, present, and future. Ohio was one of the original mining states. Yep. Back in the day. Obviously, coal is still a very important part of the industry there. And then you've got the brand new stuff with fracking, which we're going to spend some time. I want to kind of walk through past, present, and future and what CE3 does. I know one of the big issues in a state like Ohio is basically remediating those mines that have closed and making sure that their environment is restored in a way that the local citizens don't have to worry about them in the future. So tell me a little bit about what CE3 has done in the mine remediation area.
Sure. So you laid it out really well, and thank you for that. So here in the state of Ohio, we've got 1,300 miles of streams and rivers that are impacted by the effects of abandoned coal mines. These are mines that were abandoned before the surface reclamation laws that came into effect in the 1970s. Essentially, before that, coal operators could just pick up their sticks and move on. And the, since then, there's tough regulations on cleaning up and reclaiming mines, strip mines and drift mines. But before that, there wasn't. And so what we have here are lots and lots of scars, environmental scars from the coal mining industry that we're in the process of trying to clean up. So we have worked here at CE3 and our partners at the Voinovich School and the College of Engineering, the College of Arts and Sciences to do a lot of environmental monitoring, stream and river monitoring on watersheds that are impacted. We've worked with lots of partners, the Department of Natural Resources, the Ohio EPA, the U.S. EPA, Army Corps of Engineers, and a host of other partners. We've applied the university's technical skills in monitoring and data management, GIS mapping, community outreach, and trying to explain to folks why coal mining and the effects of coal mining and these acid mine drainage impacted streams are an issue in terms of quality of life, the impact on tourism and economic development in the region, as well as the simple benefit of having clean streams. So we've worked for years, we've applied millions of dollars, and actually we're starting to see some benefits. We're starting to see fish and bugs and people in streams and rivers that we have never seen before.
Excellent. That's great. So I want to turn a little bit to what CE3 does in the policy area. I know I've worked with Mark Weinberg there, who's the director of CE3 and obviously a very sharp policy mind. And I loved your phrase, pockets of excellence. I'm going to figure out how I can use that in a conversation later today. But I know you guys have really drawn together these disparate parts of an outstanding research university to work on some common challenges. So as you look at climate change and what it is as a policy problem, how are folks like Mark Weinberg and you and some of the others who are joining us later today, how are you engaged in the policy process?
Yeah, so that the policy part really works at two or three functional levels through an organization like CE3. So for instance, we work with in collaboration with state and federal agencies to understand what the impact is going to be on potential climate change legislation to the state of Ohio. I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, the state of Ohio contacted us and asked us if we would be the principal author and collaborator with our partners at Ohio State University in Columbus to write the what is really a foundational piece of research on the state's on the impact of climate change legislation on the state's economy. So, you know, the conversation really usually stems around for highly industrialized Midwestern states like Ohio with a large manufacturing base and pretty aging infrastructure, climate change legislation would really hit a state like us pretty hard. So what we did was we worked with the state. We looked at the impact of the proposed Waxman-Markey and other legislation that was kind of bouncing around on Capitol Hill. We looked at those legislation, the pieces of legislation, and we said, okay, let's do some policy modeling to see what the economic impact would be here in the state. We looked at that, very, very interesting study. We looked at a series of other policy options that the state could do to get out ahead of that, to try to mitigate the worst impacts of climate legislation and kind of take advantage of some of the opportunities that are presented in the development and deployment of new technologies, renewable energy, and things like that. So that's one area where we've kind of worked. Another is the US EPA is in the process right now of implementing new rules and regulations on monitoring for stationary sources for greenhouse gases. And so we're working with US EPA through a grant from US EPA, working with about 250 of the largest industrial producers of climate change gases to try to help them in terms of compliance with the new reporting regulations.
Well, I think what you're talking about sounds to me like you're doing a lot of that economic modeling, cost-benefit analysis, which I know is a very tricky. It's hard for people in Washington really to accurately forecast what some of the impacts of these policy changes will mean for a state or region and obviously for our country and figure out whether or not it's worth the investment there. Well, talk to me about a little bit what's over the horizon on climate change in general, energy in general. What are some of the issues that you all are tracking at CE3?
Well, you know, a lot of the work to date has been from the environmental community, for instance, is on trying to clamp down on CO2, to try to clamp down on climate change gases and so on and so forth. A lot of the climate scientists will tell you that we may be beyond that tipping point. And so if we are beyond that tipping point, we're going to start to see environmental signals such as Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Katrina, the drought that occurred in the Midwest this year and so forth. So we're starting to turn our attention not just on understanding what mechanisms for helping business and industry comply with new federal regulations, which is important, but also trying to help to catalog and describe what the impacts are of climate change as they occur in the Midwest. There's often a lot of discussion about places like glaciers melting and endangered species, impacts on endangered species and water loss and things like that. But there are subtle changes that are occurring here in Ohio. So we'll be looking at those methods of adapting to climate change, things that are going to be going on in terms of the Great Lakes going down, crop losses, things like that.
Well, I know probably a lot of people don't realize how big an energy-producing state Ohio is. You know, they think of Texas, West Virginia, Alaska maybe as the places where we do a lot of drilling, we take a lot of coal out of the ground. But, right, again, you are at sort of the intersection of current energy development in coal and also the future with what's going on with fracking and also with wind and solar. So talk to me just a little bit about some of the issues you see that you're taking a closer look at for the present and the future.
Well, you know, one of the things living in an area like southern and eastern Ohio, you know, that where the economy is based upon resource extraction, what we want to try to guard against is that boom and bust cycle that happens with a resource extractive economy. So we understand that we have tremendous resources in southeastern Ohio. We understand that those resources are going to be used to advance our economy. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that we mitigate against the worst impacts to the local communities so that those communities can use coal mining and now the new technologies with hydraulic fracturing to build upon a more resilient economy going forward. So we're trying to identify new economic models to promote clean technology and renewable energy and other mechanisms, as well as wealth generation, wealth management strategies that recycle that wealth as it comes about through this region so that we can build that more resilient economy as we look forward.
Dr. Miller, let me ask you to give folks some info on the CE3 website and also how to get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation with you about some of these issues.
Sure. They can contact me. My email is millers1@ohio.edu. And you can find information about all of these projects that I've talked about on the CE3 website, which is www.ohio.edu/CE3, the number 3.
Terrific. Well, I hope folks will visit that. We're going to be back to talk with a couple of Dr. Miller's colleagues from CE3 and Ohio University. We're going to talk fracking in just a moment after this commercial break. Keep it here on Capital Thinking.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than 4 decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has 46 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Pat and Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Pat and Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Pat and Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Pat and Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Pat and Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back. With Congress out of town, we're spending some time doing a deep dive into the issue of climate change and what we're doing at universities nationwide to help develop new technologies that will help the President and Congress achieve their vision in the environmental space. We're talking with some great professors from Ohio University's CE3, that's the Consortium for Energy, Economics, and the Environment. And joining us for this segment is Dr. Jason Tremblay. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Mechanical Engineering at Ohio University, and he's an expert on the area of cleaning fracking wastewater. And so, Dr. Tremblay, welcome to the show. I know we just had Scott Miller talking a little bit about CE3, and we delved a little bit into the impacts of hydraulic fracturing, but why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the research you do on water remediation as it regards fracking.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me today, Kevin. To give you an idea of what we're doing in terms of our water remediation work, one of the major issues associated with shale development within the U.S. Revolves around two things, one being the amount of water that's used to actually develop the well in terms of the hydraulic fracturing process, and two, how to manage the wastewater, so the flow back and produced water generated by these wells. And so we've been looking at this issue for the past year and a half or so, and you know, we're seeing technologies that are out there that can help address these issues, but they can usually only address them in a piecewise fashion. And so what we've done is developed a technology which we believe that's very cost effective and can address all of the issues within wastewater. Basically, we can take that flow back and produce water, treat it, and produce a water with quality such that it can be reused for subsequent well development. So it gives us an advantage that it will reduce the water intensity of the shale development process, and it also will provide industry with a lower cost water management technology.
Jason, I had seen something in the newspapers a while back about the mayor of the governor of Colorado, who used to be the mayor of Denver there, John Hickenlooper, that he was so confident about some of the efforts that companies were taking in this space that he'd actually consumed an entire glass of water that had come through a product like this, that, you know, what was recycled water from fracking. Have you heard about that?
Not in that particular case, but I've heard of other instances of, you know, various organizations or people demonstrating the quality of their, you know, water, cleanup technology.
So let me come back to topic. So in addition to what you're doing on these research grants with, federal and state government, obviously this is an area that's ripe for corporate partnerships. I know you've got a good history there. So talk to us a little bit about the corporations that you work with on research like this.
Sure. So in terms of government sponsorship, we really have funding from two different areas, and those are from the federal government, which is the Research Partnership to Secure Energy for America, and also the Ohio Third Frontier from the state. And from those organizations, we have approximately $2 million in funding. Now, we also have significant backing from industry, and industry is interested in the development of this technology because it holds a key to help them reduce the cost of their shale development exercises. And the industry is actually supporting this project through technology development and is also adding an additional $600,000 to $700,000 in terms of dollars to the project to help its development.
Nice.
Now, in terms of in terms of specific commercial partners, we have Hess Corporation, which is our leading industrial partner, and Hess is one of the leading companies in the shale industry with operations in the Bakken in North Dakota, Eagle Ford in Texas, and also beginning to develop the Utica shale play in Ohio. Also, we have Aquionics Incorporated, which is a company that has a UV treatment technology for wastewater. And so basically what they're helping us with is addressing the bacteria issues associated with flowback and produced water. And the final is Parker Hannifin, which is a leader in process control and thermal processing technologies, which is helping us to develop a control scheme for the technology.
Well, Jason, so walk us through the actual process that you've designed and that you're testing as part of your research and what it does.
Okay, so what our technology does is holistically it addresses all of the major components associated with wastewater from shale operations, those being suspended solids, normally occurring radioactive material, dissolved solids, hydrocarbons, etc. And so we've designed the process such that it's able to address all of those key components while producing useful byproducts that can be reused within the shale industry and in addition to the clean water. And so what we're doing is basically we start out with the process and we remove suspended solids from the water, and those would be, rocky material, basically solid particles that come back up from the shale. Next, we use a combination of a couple different technologies. We use UV technology to remediate the bacteria associated in the water. And the reason that is important is if we reuse that water, we don't want to cause any fouling or production of sulfur, which could be possible if this bacteria is still in the water. And so that helps us address that issue. Then we have a couple of other steps in terms of precipitation, and we use the precipitation to remove key components, say like strontium and barium. Because those materials could be hazardous, we actually remove them up front of our main process component, and we actually can reutilize both that strontium and barium as byproducts within the process for removal of other materials such as the radioactive material. And then the largest piece of the system is a supercritical reactor. And so what's really nice about that reactor is that once we take water to supercritical conditions, it allows us to easily remove all of the dissolved solids within the material, producing a solid precipitate. And then also it allows us to reform the hydrocarbons remaining in the water that produce a hydrogen gas, and we simply take that hydrogen byproduct gas, recycle it within the process to provide heat for the system. And then the solid products that we produce, we can actually reuse those within the hydrofracturing process as it's used as an additive for the hydrofracturing fluid.
Well, so Jason, I know this is obviously, there are other methods of dealing with flowback water. So give me an understanding of what the advantages of this new method are compared to what's already out there.
Well, the biggest key advantage that we have right now, and there's multiple, but the biggest key that we see is cost. Water management techniques that are currently being used by industry can cost anywhere from $3 to $8 per barrel to dispose or treat the water. It depends upon their location, distance to a disposal well, et cetera. And so we're looking at costs right now that we're projecting based upon our testing that we've completed in the range of approximately $1.50 with probably about a 30%, plus or minus 30% in that cost area. And so we have significantly lower costs that we project. Additionally, other advantages that we have within our process is that it is compact. We're actually able to take this process and add it to a tractor or a semi-trailer so that we can actually take this process out into the field. And so we can treat the water at the well site. And so what that does is it allows the water to stay within the shale play, and it significantly reduces the amount of trucking that's associated with hauling water both to the shale play for hydraulic fracturing and also hauling wastewater away to dispose of wells. And so it has both advantages to the industry in terms of reducing their water management costs. It's going to reduce the amount of water that has to be taken from local watersheds in order to develop shale wells. And it also has significant advantages to the public in terms of, again, reducing that water intensity and also reducing the amount of truck traffic. So reducing, impact on local road infrastructure, emissions from, semi-trailer truck traffic, et cetera.
Wow, all right, nice, lots of advantages. Now, I know you've got another project going on involving asphalt binders and biomass waste. You want to talk to us just a little bit? I got about 2.5 minutes left.
Sure. One of the main areas that we're seeing in terms of biomass research is really for production of biofuels. And when we look at that biofuels market, it's absolutely huge. It has to compete with the standard fuels market, which is already in terms of capital investment, is already in place, and so it has. There's a lot of hurdles for it to make it into the market. Where we're going with our biomass research is really looking at converting biomass into asphalt binders, and the reason that we're looking at that as a first initial market for biomass-based products is due to the cost of asphalt binders. Now, over the past decade or so, all of the refineries within the U.S. have been upgraded so that they can work with heavier and heavier crude oils. Because of the technology that's there, they actually produce more and more transportation fuels and less heavier ends, such as the asphalt, which is used for our roads. And so because of that, the cost of asphalt has actually gone up tremendously. And so this gives us a nice market, although still large, but it's manageable within the biomass production that we have now. And so what we're doing is we're looking at taking waste biomass sources, so agricultural residues, municipal solid waste, et cetera, and converting that into a asphalt binder with equivalent properties as its petroleum-derived counterpart.
Interesting, interesting. Well, Jason, why don't you give us real fast your email address for folks who want to follow up with you and any other website you want to direct them to where they can learn more about the research you're doing at Ohio.
Sure. My email address is Trembly, T-R-E-M-B-L-Y, at ohio.edu. And our web address to the Ohio Coal Research Center, which I am the associate director and work with, is www.ohio.edu/Ohio Coal.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks. We're going to be back in just a minute to talk about biofuel production. Keep it here on Capital Thinking.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
What's your name worth? The loss of a single patent, trademark, or copyright can cost millions. Make sure your intellectual property is protected. Trust Patton Boggs to manage and protect your most important assets.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hola.
Konnichiwa.
Bonjour.
Hello.
From Anchorage to Abu Dhabi.
Markaba.
From Denver to
Hello.
Doha.
Ciao.
Patton Boggs makes
Niko.
Business transactions
Gracias.
The world over.
Oi.
Rely on our insights for your next deal. Patton Boggs, the international business team. Straight, unfiltered, Patton Boggs.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, we are continuing our discussion with various professors and esteemed folks from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, talking about the linkage between one of President Obama's signature initiatives, that's climate change and environmental preservation, and also his desire to ramp up American ingenuity. Here we're talking with these professors about some of the ingenious things they are doing that will contribute to the long-term health of our environment here in the United States. Joining us for this segment, Dr. Dave Bayless. He is the Gerald Lohr Professor of Mechanical Engineering at Ohio University and also holds graduate faculty status in the chemical engineering space there as well. Dr. Bayless is an expert on biofuel production, including algae. And having just talked about water remediation with Dr. Tremblay, we want to shift gears and talk a little bit about the power of algae and biofuels. So, Dr. Bayless, welcome to the show. I know studying algae is your passion, and I want to hear a little bit about how you're using that for water remediation to start. Tell us how you got started in that area.
Sure. Good afternoon, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on your program. Our work in water remediation with algae actually started about 15 years ago, looking at using thermophilic or very high temperature cyanobacteria to remove carbon dioxide directly from flue gas of scrubbed power plants, that is, ones that had scrubbers for removal of sulfur dioxide. From that little project, we've built about 15 years of funded research, and that has moved us into where we are now, which is the host institution for an Ohio Third Frontier Right project that's known as the Center for Algal Engineering Research and Commercialization. And part of that work, which is very collaborative between two universities, ourselves and the University of Toledo, and a number of small algae companies in the region, has been to look at the use of algae for cleaning up water. It sort of is a natural extension of what we've been doing with respect to growing algae for biofuels or for the proteins for animal feeds, because essential to growing anything photosynthetically is that you need water, you need inorganic carbon to get into the water, and you need nutrients and you need sunlight. And in Ohio, we have a pretty serious problem with a lot of the nutrients, which are essentially runoff from agricultural concerns, whether they be from fields or from concentrated animal feed operations.
Sure.
That water has what algae or plants in general need to grow. But when it gets into the watershed and then collects, usually in a fairly significant body of water, it then provides for an uncontrolled growth of algae or cyanobacteria at that lake or pond, wherever the water accumulates. That uncontrolled growth has a lot of negative effects. Among the largest is that it could be a potentially hazardous cyanobacteria that would grow in the lake. And that's what we've seen a lot throughout Ohio, shutting down some of our biggest sources of tourism. And the other is that once the cyanobacteria or algae bloom and die and fall into the lake, the organic material decomposes and removes oxygen out of the lake and can be very harmful to the aquatic species there.
Sure.
So what we've done is we're working with a company called Algevolve, who designs what are called bioreactors. They're systems to grow a lot of algae in a very small space and help them to develop ways to get wastewater into their reactors to be cleaned up by the algae, which naturally remove things like phosphates and ammonia and other forms of nitrogen. Their big concern is they need a source of inorganic carbon for the algae to use in photosynthesis. And so we have been developing technology, which is now being commercialized by a startup company called Eco2Capture, to get carbon dioxide from a gas stream, even air, into the water that is used within that bioreactor. So it's really kind of worked out well. And it makes great sense for our region because we do have polluted waterways, and that pollution is really nutrition for algae. So it just seems to make sense to link the two together because in the end, then once you grow algae in a controlled way, you can take it and extract the lipids for biofuels or the proteins for animal feeds or the fatty acids for, like, omega-3 fatty acids that people use for nutritional supplements because it has so much value.
So you're going to take my, this algae after it cleans up some water, you're going to make me take it in a pill to, for my heart, is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, that's a pretty big market. It's, there's a company called Martech that produces its omega-3 fatty acids for mostly for the baby food industry. It's a billion-dollar company. So.
Sure. I'm going to have to be a little more careful about which kinds I take now. I want mine to be, I think, the clean kind. So I think, that, Dave, you may have hit on one of the things I was interested on, which is, you know, my not being a scientist, my first instinct is, boy, algae to clean water, you know, it seems odd to me. But are there any other particular benefits out of using algae in comparison to some of the current approaches that are being taken?
The biggest benefit by far is the fact that you can use the algae then after you've grown it for some kind of beneficial use. Economically speaking, once, you know, most wastewater remediation systems basically then just have water that needs to be, you know, dumped essentially. This system, when you're using algae, now has a product, the grown algae, that you can use for, if you want to extract the lipids or the fats from them, that then can be turned into biofuels, which is certainly something that we are seriously working on. You can take the proteins out of them for animal feed, and as we go forward, especially after you look at the last couple of years of drought in the Midwest, there's a significant need for animal feed other than grains, which have been, you know, really attacked by the drought.
Sure.
And again, you know, you were talking about the nutraceuticals and the omega-3 pills that people take. So it all, since it has that value, it offers something that's much more than just cleaning up water. It's cleaning up water and making products.
Dave, I know one of the frustrations for folks like you is that often if not often, almost always, innovation is ahead of a legislator or a regulator's ability to manage that innovation. So with algae and water remediation starting to take off as a viable industry, what are some of the challenges that you have to deal with in the legislative and regulatory arena?
Well, that's an excellent question, and they are many, because wastewater remediation is a rather established field. You know, you go back over, 40 years for the Clean Water Act. And so it's pretty well established, and there are a number of technologies that are already in the market. From a regulatory point of view, the use of algae is very, very new. And so there's not a whole lot of experience among various state and regional EPA, federal EPA offices. With the use of it. So it's kind of new and different to them, and new and different isn't always good, right? The other problem is that, you know, it's among the commercial side is convincing potential, users that this could offer them value that other water remediation techniques don't provide. We are fortunate, well, and unfortunate. There's a serious challenge out there in front of us, especially with respect to cleaning up large watersheds, the Potomac River Basin, a number of bodies of water within Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, suffer from these seasonal algal blooms that occur because of the agricultural runoff. And there really is no other solution at this point. It's very hard to deal with the waste that's coming off of an agricultural site, like a concentrated animal feed operation, and do it economically. And so we think that because our approach makes sense economically, it will eventually catch on and regulators will start to understand it and incorporate it into future rulings. But right now it is very new, and that makes it very difficult for us.
Interesting. Well, you're spending so much time in the present, I want you to sort of look in your crystal ball and tell me where you think the algae industry is headed here in the United States. What are some of the developments we might see on a 5-year or 10-year horizon? What will they do for us?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I think the biggest thing that I am hoping for is within the current environment, which I see as very positive. I see Department of Defense leadership in pushing the biofuels, especially biofuels from algae, agenda forward, and their strategic thinking that it's a necessary component of our overall energy security. I would really love to see a major success. I would love to see a company, just for example, we don't have any real serious affiliation with them, but a company like Sapphire that's building out 120 acres out in New Mexico, to have them to have a commercial success, and so the industry gains more acceptance. Unfortunately, the industry has been hit by so many companies that come in and promise the world and not deliver, and it sets everybody else back. But I think the long-term potential, that 10-year horizon, is very, very favorable. The companies that we deal with are looking at so much more than just biofuels. They are looking at the animal feed potential. They are looking at the nutraceuticals, the wastewater remediation potential of algae, to put it all into one package so that they can deliver multiple products across, you know, various industries, so they can diversify their economic portfolio, and therefore algae doesn't have to be kind of a one-horse show. And when that happens, when algae is able to penetrate into those markets, I think it will then catch on, because at that point, if you can produce algae and have multiple ways to sell the products that come from it, then you can expand production to deal with a potential biofuels play or a potential animal feed play or whatever, and the expansion will be very significant. So we're hoping for that big commercial success to help get the industry on its a strong set of blocks, and then take off from there.
Very nice. Well, Dave, why don't you give folks your contact info and any website you want them to direct them to for more info about what you do?
Sure. My email address is Bayless, that's B as in Bravo, A-Y-L-E-S-S as in Sierra, at ohio.edu. Our Right Project webpage is OhioAlgaeCenter.com. And I would strongly encourage people to go check out our webpage for the Institute for Sustainable Energy and the Environment at Ohio University at www.ohio.edu/ISEE.
Very good. Well, Dr. Bayless, thanks for joining us. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about the Clean Tech Open and some other things that are going on in the sustainability world. Keep it here for more Capital Thinking.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than four decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Well, I misspoke before the break. We're actually not talking about the Clean Tech Open. We're joined now by my colleague Josh Green from Patton Boggs to talk about our firm's dialogue series on sustainability. Josh Green is the deputy chair of our energy and environment policy practice here and an acknowledged expert on the subject from his time on Capitol Hill and his work with clients across the country in this area. So, Josh, welcome back. And before we talk a little bit about the series, explain to everyone what is and isn't meant by the term sustainability.
Sure. Thank you, Kevin, for having me on. So sustainability, I know, means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and it has its genesis and origins in the corporate social responsibility movement of a couple of decades ago. The CSR acronym is known to a lot of folks. And, you know, over that time, sustainability has come to mean slightly different things in terms of the impact on the natural environment by mechanical processes and our 21st century economy. But at the end of the day, sustainability is all about the way in which we can have more environmentally benign effects on our environments while at the same time remaining competitive, becoming more productive and becoming more efficient, both in our, throughout the different sectors of our economy. I know that some people associate it immediately with green and other types of political and policy agendas. But one of the things that we have seen, not only with some of our clients, both international and national, is that sustainability actually is good business. And that's not just necessarily in the marketing and the branding space, but more importantly, in the operational savings, capital expenditures, higher productivity of employees, and better engagement with customers.
Nice. Well, I know you're the guy who founded the sustainability series, so tell us why you did it and what's going on now.
Sure. So we launched the series last year here at the firm, and one of the things that I was thinking about in doing this was, you know, being in the space and a lot of peers and others across the country and in Washington, you know, a lot of us are used to kind of going to events or conferences where we have the requisite 3-4 person panel. Each one has their PowerPoint, and before you know it, an hour has gone by, no one has asked a question, no one has had any really meaningful interface, and then there's about 10 minutes of Q&A. And sometimes that's a good format, especially if you're trying to absorb a lot of different types of information, statistics and data and things like that. But what I was thinking is that I think there are a lot of people from across the different business sectors, across industry, across the public sector, that would like to be involved in a more informal dialogue and discussion surrounding the various aspects of sustainability, but in a format where there could be some meaningful discussion. So a la kind of a 60-minute style, although we don't do gotcha questions, what we decided to do is set up a format where a practitioner in the space would interview a figure in the sustainability field, whether private sector person, public sector person, and have a little bit of an interview, if you will, for about 10, 15, 20 minutes with some really pointed questions, provocative and or probing questions. And then open it up to those individuals who are in attendance, and typically we have attendance anywhere between 50 and 100 people, where people could interchange and dialogue with the person that has come to be a guest speaker. That way, I think there's more meaningful Q&A. Things can be followed up in a more substantive manner. We're not cutting people off because, you know, we only have 2 minutes left of the 10 minutes of Q&A. And the couple events that we launched last year were very well received, and we're looking forward to a robust set of events this year.
Very nice. Well, talk to me about some of the key issues and trends you see in the sustainability space.
Well, one of the things that we're seeing across all industries, and this is not just energy, you know, this is everything from healthcare to real estate, consumer goods, actually is in the supply chain and logistics field. I think, you know, when most people think about sustainability, they're thinking about energy conservation, energy efficiency, less toxins in the environment, and all of that's important, and there's a sustainability role for all of that. But business is, and I mentioned this earlier, business is seeing sustainability as a driver for profitability and productivity. And in logistics, and we see UPS with their campaign, we also see IBM, right, with their Smart Planet campaign, where you can improve on operational efficiencies, you improve profitability, you have accretive value to shareholders, whether it be a privately held company or a publicly held company. And we're seeing these trends in the supply chain efficiency, productivity start to cut across all different sectors. Another big sector that we're seeing this in is actually in energy storage and data storage. Most people probably intuitively think, well, you know, a lot of the data, whether it's your email or Google or all of these other advanced search engines, you know, all of this stuff is in the cloud. Oh, what's the cloud? Well, you know, the cloud actually are massive data centers all around the world that consume tremendous amounts of energy. And if they're also happen to be co-located in a metropolitan area or a suburb, you know, they have environmental effects, they impacts, you know, they need energy, they need water, all of these things. And we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity with manufacturers in the data center space, servers, Intel's one on their processor technology, all trying to become more energy efficient to drive additional value. And then finally, the other thing that we're seeing, and it's somewhat has a nexus to what the president has discussed, and I think what's been a robust debate and will continue here in the United States on natural gas and hydraulic fracturing and the shale boom and what that's meaning for jobs and job creation and employment in the United States. There are some environmental impacts, certainly, that that process has. But one of the things we're seeing in the sustainability field is advances in advanced materials and chemicals, so that those type of E&P or extraction and production processes in the energy space can be done in a more environmentally benign manner. Now, I know that there's some in the environmental community may have issues with the practice, and we're not here to debate that. But when you can bring the technologies and investment and innovation to extractive industries, let alone others, that's a good thing for the environment, and also it's a good thing for the economy.
Very good. Josh, real fast, got a minute left. Tell me the upcoming plans for the series. What's next on the horizon after this event?
Oh, sure. We had an event scheduled for next Friday with former Assistant Secretary of State Claudia Murray for Oceans and Environment. She has a current position as Senior Counselor, to the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, and his International Sustainability Unit. We've learned that we need to reschedule that, so this is available on the Pat and Boggs website. But so we're going to reschedule that first event to April 9th. That's a Tuesday. And then from there, we're planning to have additional events with some government officials in the Obama administration, as well as some private sector folks in the real estate community with Deutsche Bank and some other manufacturers. And we're really looking forward to a robust series this year.
Very good. All right. For folks who want more information, they can contact Josh. Give them your email address, Josh.
Sure. My email is jgreen with an E on the end of that green at pattenboggs.com.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for us here today on Capital Thinking. We'll be back next week. Until then, have a great weekend.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.